Are kids' attitudes, as well as any behavioral and emotional problems, really linked to the vast number of disorders diagnosed by mental health professionals every year? Or might many of these disorders really just be the natural byproducts of going against God's design for our emotional and spiritual well-being? Well, asking that question opens a can of worms, because these types of problems have become systemic in a nation now bent on pursuing a new morality and a variety of new gods, that's gods with a little g, gods that put pleasure and feeling good about oneself above everything else. We're the parents. If we buy into the wrong thinking here, are we actually the ones poisoning our own children, raising a much different type of adult and leading to a much different America? Confronting the assault on our families, our faith, and our freedom, and making sure we don't let the kids drink the Kool-Aid. That's next on License to Parent. Well, hello once again, and welcome to License to Parent, the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy, a year-long Christ-centered residential program helping teens in crisis, and by extension, their families as well. I'm Rich Rosel, and our host on License to Parent is Trace Embry, the founder and director of Shepherd's Hill. Now, Trace, I know that we have heard our parents saying many of the same things about our generation, although I think the phrase, don't drink the Kool-Aid, didn't have quite the same meaning when I was a kid, but really, America is a much different place than when you and I grew up, isn't it?
Yeah, that may be the understatement of the year, Rich. During my lifetime, I remember tremendous cultural changes in the 1960s, and I remember my parents squawking about it all the time. First it was the Beatles and their goofy haircuts and music, then it was all about the hippies and their sex, drugs, and rock and roll and long hair. The world really was changing at Mach 3. In fact, I heard a former Vietnam POW put it in perspective. He said, when I got shot down in Vietnam, America was watching Dick Van Dyke and Mary Tyler Moore sleeping in twin beds as a married couple
right.
on a black and white TV when the most popular movie in Hollywood was The Sound of Music. He says, when I returned to the States, I came home to Sgt. Pepper, a psychedelic sex, drugs, and hippie culture, Ronan Martin's Laugh-In on a color TV, and Dustin Hoffman's award-winning The Graduate. Rich, that's an incredible amount of change in just a few years.
Yeah.
But even those changes are nothing compared to what digital technology and the internet have done to our culture since then. Today, the world is changing at the speed of light, not just Mach 3. And now we and our kids have acquired political and moral appetites for things that neither our founding fathers nor our God ever intended that we have appetites for.
Well, that's completely true. And speaking of appetites, I mentioned the phrase, don't let the kids drink the Kool-Aid. And of course, Kool-Aid, a nice sweet treat. But of course, that phrase refers to a nice sweet, though poisoned, drink. And author, columnist, and speaker Mary Beth Hicks has spent more than a dozen years writing from what she describes as the intersection of parenting and culture. She's got a book out by that same title, and we've invited her to join us as we dive into this topic. Mary Beth used to be a weekly columnist for the Washington Times. She now writes a monthly column called Teachable Moments that's featured in Catholic Digest magazine. She's a frequent commentator on cultural issues on Fox News Channel's Hannity and on Fox and Friends, also on the Christian Broadcasting Network 700 Club and EWTN's The World Over. She's also a regular contributor to dozens of national and regional radio programs, including, among others, Sean Hannity, Dennis Miller, Laura Ingraham, Jim Bohannon, Brian Kilmeade, and many others. And by the way, unlike you, Trace, Mary Beth began her career as a writer in the Reagan White House, so this may well be the closest we've ever gotten to speaking to a president.
Although Donald Trump is on our list, so.
Oh, okay.
Well, Mary Beth, welcome to License to Parent.
Well, thank you. Gosh, you didn't have to read all the details, but I appreciate the accolade. That's great.
Well, now you've got to live up to a very high standard.
That's right.
So,
that's right.
Presidential.
Can go nowhere but down from here, but at least people's interest is piqued. We got that going for
very
us.
Good.
Well, with all its dye and sugar, Kool-Aid really isn't a good idea for our kids to be drinking. But in your book, Don't Let Your Kids Drink the Kool-Aid, you're not talking about a colorful, sugary drink here, are you? Exactly what are you talking about?
Yeah, no. So, you know, as Rich mentioned, Kool-Aid sort of refers to that Jonestown Kool-Aid, that poison that looks sweet, but it's that same mindset from, you know, I would argue from the left or from a progressive point of view. I'm not necessarily talking about partisan politics. I'm talking about a liberalism that really wants to undermine the Judeo-Christian foundations that our country was founded on and that we want to instill in our children. And so, you know, we just see it from every angle. So our kids are completely confronted with the same messages, the same sort of progressive messages, whether it's in schools, in their pop culture, in the media that they consume, you know, everywhere they turn. And so parents are really needing to make themselves very aware of what sort of messages are being fed to kids, whether it's even from song lyrics or the halftime show or at a Super Bowl or the news channel that they use in the school systems to give kids current events. I mean, everywhere you turn, there's kind of only one note being sung from the choir. Mm-hmm. And so parents really need to be very aware of all of these messages and who's sending them and have a lot of media literacy around what our kids are being confronted with. I would argue it's near impossible to shield kids from all of it anymore because it's so ubiquitous. It's just everywhere.
Yeah.
But so that's why you have to have this level of media literacy and a communication skill to be able to talk with your children really frankly and openly and in a way that doesn't corner them so that they feel, you know, that they can't talk to you. You have to have this open communication with your kids so you can teach them how they're being manipulated in a sense by the culture that's around them.
And Mary Beth, you made an analogy a moment ago talking about the same note being sung by all these different areas. You know, I've learned this from my own kids. I'll hear them singing a song that I know very well because it was a song I grew up with, but they're singing it wrong. They didn't hear it quite right or remember it quite right, but they've sung it so many times the wrong way that they believe it to be the right way. And so if everybody is singing the wrong note, it may be the incorrect note, but after a while we take it to be right because we've heard it so often.
Yeah.
And we've got to be wise and we've got to be sensitive to God's leading. We've also got to be doing our own homework, as you indicate, to make sure that we're up on what's going on culturally so that we know right from wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and parents are so reliant on having to be in the culture. You know, if you're working family, you're putting your kids in schools and you have to, and not everybody can homeschool. Not everyone's called to homeschool. And so there are so many parents who rely on the, you know, their good local schools to really help them educate their children. But they're relying too much on that because they're not aware that the system that creates, that, you know, that prepares teachers for the classroom is also preparing teachers with an agenda that is some completely systematic and intended to really create a teaching force that helps to promote a specific agenda. And so just those sorts of things, like you have to know what you're up against at least so that you can know how to respond.
Yeah. Well, beyond programs like this and books like yours, what's it going to take to wake up more American parents to the fact that they and their kids are on a collision course with disaster if they don't start waking up?
You know, I think some of it is starting to come alive. Certainly a vast segment of our population, of our American culture, you know, expressed itself in this last year through the election that we're kind of sick and tired of certain kinds of mandated thinking, you know, that kind of thing. You know, it's almost invariable in the springtime in almost every high school, public high school across America, they do the, you know, the diversity day, which is really just, you know, an indoctrination day about the gay and lesbian political agenda.
Boy, it sure
and
is.
If you're a Christian parent and your kids are in that school, you know, and you don't know it's coming, you really have no alternative but to pull your kid out on that day. But you may not have even known it was going to be happening.
I was about to say, it's hard to opt out of something that's already happened.
And some schools won't let you opt out, or you go to jail for it.
Right. Well, and the schools, of course, have gotten so savvy around this. So in most public schools and virtually all public schools, you know, in most states, I should say, there is the rules around public education and sexual education are that parents have the right to know about something that's going to be presented in advance. They're supposed to know, they're supposed to have the opportunity to review materials in advance. They're supposed to be able to opt their kid out if it's not material that they don't feel their child needs to see or needs to be part of. And these are like the cornerstones of still having some parental control over certain topics. Mm-hmm. But what the school systems have done is they've moved a lot of the material that they're really using for propaganda into something called the school safety program. So they take it out of what they were previously referred to as sex education or health education, and they move it to the school safety program because when it's in school safety and it's about bullying, you can't opt your kid out.
Yeah, redefine the terms.
No longer, Yep, you can no longer opt your child out if what they're going to be teaching is the normalizing of homosexuality and transgenderism and how you, as a student, need to have empathy for all students. And so you can't get your kid out of that. They're going to have indoctrination around that. And of course, my point all these times, I've written tons of columns about it, is when it comes to something like bullying, you actually don't have to have any empathy for anyone to not be a bully. Bullying is always wrong, no matter who it is, for any reason. You don't have to understand someone not to bully them. You just don't bully them because it's wrong, because God did not create us to be tyrannical toward other people, right?
Yeah.
And so we're even giving our kids the wrong message around bullying, that, you know, you shouldn't bully someone because you should understand where they're coming from. You don't even need to like someone to not bully them. Bullying is always wrong, right?
Yeah.
So it's that sort of like, we don't even have like a moral compass that tells our kids there's one right thing. Here's something that's always wrong no matter what, right? We say, oh, it's wrong. If you understood how you are making someone feel, then that would, you know, you would know this was wrong. But really, feelings don't have anything to do with it. You can really just not bully someone because it's the wrong thing to do. But, you know, the schools have found very tricky ways to get around parents' preferences. And I think most parents know or probably understand that the people who lead the schools and many who teach in the schools, and certainly the people who educate educators, are much more left than the parents. Parents are going to still be pretty mainstream in their thinking, identify mostly as Christians, identify mostly as people who are believers in God at the very least, and they really don't want their schools used as places that indoctrinate their children, but they don't know how to fight back from that because they feel really ill-equipped or inadequate, or that, you know, that the schools know best.
I'm just curious about this. I mean, obviously the school system is an area where we need to be particularly vigilant, but so is all of life. And in our entertainment, for example, the choices we make there, I want to believe that the parents who listen to this program do so because they want to do a good job raising their kids. They want to guide them in the way the Lord made them. But when it comes to making choices about entertainment and whatnot, we can't trust labels like kid and family friendly just because they say that. What counsel might you have for families in terms of the other influences that they choose to let their kids be exposed
to? Absolutely. Every family needs to have its own set of guidelines around media. And it isn't even like rules per se about you can watch that show, but you can't watch that show. I mean, we did ban MTV in my house.
Good for you.
100 years ago, and it's banned. We just don't. I feel like MTV has single-handedly tried to ruin the culture, so why would I help them, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what you have to have is your children, especially younger children, need to understand the context about your media values. So you say, we would never watch something that's disrespectful to women or to others, or that shows violence in a way that's gratuitous and makes, you know, and entertains the dark part of your heart. You know, everybody can be called to sinfulness and sinful thoughts, and we're not going to look for things that call you into sinful ideas. Okay, so that's a standard that we have. Or our family standard is, we really only watch media that celebrates, you know, relationships that we think are something that God is proud of and God calls us to. So we don't watch relationships that are, you know, promiscuous or that are not grounded in biblical truth around relationships. So that's going to limit some of your choices, right? So if we give children, though, those guidelines that help them to evaluate media, now we're teaching them those skills of media discernment that they need to have. Because they're going to be confronted with media all the time. When you're not there,
mm-hmm.
It doesn't, you know, I mean, it's just hard. It's just impossible to So we need to help our children learn when to turn away, when to turn it off, when to change the channel. If they're with your friends at a friend's house and they're watching a movie, they say, oh, this has some things in it I can tell right off the bat that my parents have told me are not part of our media standards.
Yeah.
And they need to use language like, we have media standards.
Yeah. And I will say, when our kids were younger, we would talk to the parents, you know, if they're going over to Billy's house, then we talked to Billy's parents first and shared our views and asked their views about watching stuff. And that put us all on the same team. And we also said to our kids, if you're ever in doubt, call us.
Yeah.
we will be glad, you know.
That's just wise protocol for 2017 America.
And they did. And our kids were good about saying, I knew that wouldn't be, you know, that wouldn't pass muster. So I didn't even bother calling. We didn't watch it. We do need to pause briefly on today's program. You're listening to License to Parent. You'll find us online at licensetoparent.org. Our guest today is Mary Beth Hicks, author of the book, Don't Let the Kids Drink the Kool-Aid. You'll find her and her books online at marybethhicks.com and also the books at amazon.com. Back with more conversation right after this.
Remember back in the late 80s and early 90s as the internet hit the scene? You know, the information superhighway? We had great hopes that this new knowledge economy would make our teens more aware, diversify their tastes, and improve their verbal skills. But the Enlightenment didn't happen. Technology has had the opposite effect. What once promised great hope for the future is now used to indulge in diversions. The Dumbest Generation by Mark Bauerlein, subtitled How the Digital Age Stupefies Young Americans and Jeopardizes Our Future, or Don't Trust Anyone Under 30, presents a portrait of the young American mind at this critical juncture, revealing the true cost of the digital age and our last chance to fix it. The Dumbest Generation by Mark Bauerlein, available in the store at licensetoparent.org. Proceeds benefit the Shepherd's Hill Academy Scholarship Fund.
This is Ken Ham, President and CEO of Answers in Genesis and the Creation Museum. And I just want to say how much I appreciate License to Parent broadcast. I am so thrilled to know that there are those out there who are standing on the authority of God's Word in this age of compromise, but teaching parents how to build their thinking on the Word of God and to pass on that spiritual legacy to the next generation. So often we see that spiritual legacy being lost, and we need more people listening to broadcasts like License to Parent so that they will know how to pass on that spiritual legacy to the next generation.
With the generous gifts from people just like you, we're able to provide parents with practical insights to navigate the challenges families face in today's culture, as well as helping troubled teens in our year-long residential program. To learn more and to donate, visit licensetoparent.org.
This is Licensed to Parent, the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy, a year-long Christ-centered residential program working with teens in crisis. And, of course, our goal here to export some of what we learn outside the gates to help make you a more effective parent, a more intentional parent, and hopefully avoid the need for a residential program in your family's life. Our guest today is columnist and speaker Mary Beth Hicks, author of the book, Don't Let the Kids Drink the Kool-Aid. Trace?
Well, Mary Beth, before the break, we alluded a little bit to MTV. I am amazed at what Christian parents allow their kids to listen to at young ages, music-wise. The fact that they have an iPod and it's packed full of some horrific stuff. What role do you see entertainment in general, music specifically, when it comes to pouring this Kool-Aid into the hearts and minds of our kids? And how can parents be wiser in this area?
Yeah, so I've written about this, I want to say, in all three books because it's so important. I keep repeating myself. But, the American Academy of Pediatrics has quantified that young people who listen to sexually graphic lyrics become more sexually precocious at a young age than kids who don't listen to those kinds. There is literally a direct correlation.
Yeah, the studies are all there.
Exactly. So for one thing, it's parents need to just know that it is not benign. This music is not, it's not just like toe tapping and it's got a great beat. Because I've been with parents who are putting the music on themselves in the car so they can jam along with the kids.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, do you have any idea what you're talking about, what you're saying? And so what I've always counseled parents to do, and I give parenting talks all over the country, and I love to do that. So if listeners want to bring me around, I'd love to. But is to, first of all, if you're really going to be a good parent in all the ways that you would supervise your child, say, at the beach or in the shopping mall, you need to supervise your child in their iPod or in their iPhone or whatever device they have where they keep music. And you need to listen to it. So you need to grab that phone or that iPod, and you need to say, hey, someone look at your playlist. Let me see what you're listening to these days. And you need to put the headphones on, and you need to listen to it. But you're not going to be able to understand the lyrics because you're a parent. You won't really get it. So you're going to have to go to lyrics.com so you can read the lyrics. And when you read the lyrics, you will be aghast because when you see these things in print, and they do print the lyrics right out, you're going to be horrified by what you've been tapping along to, except you won't really know what the lyrics mean. Then you're going to have to go to urbandictionary.com. And that is going to absolutely curl your toes. Because when you then start understanding what the slang means and what is actually being sung about, you will discover that you yourself, mom or dad, mostly mom to be frank, has been turning on the radio and toe-tapping to kids, and you've been singing about every kind of graphic sexual activity, every kind of drug that
perversion.
You didn't know you were singing a song about drug use. You just thought you were singing something fun. And, you know, all of these things, it's really important that we aren't naive. And we can't just say, oh, well, the kids are listening to it. And the fact is, your kid, if you take a certain song or a certain album off of their device and you say, that's not going to be on our phone, they're going to still go to school and hear it when somebody's getting off the bus, or they're going to still, you know, hear it when they go to the mall because it's playing in the store.
We don't have to sanction it.
Exactly. So the point is, you have to be the one to have the conversation so that at least when they're confronted with it, they understand what is wrong. We can't just say it doesn't hurt them. It's not a big deal.
Exactly.
Because it does have an imprint on their heart.
Yeah. I'll say about music what Mark Twain said about the Bible. It's not what I don't understand about it. It's what I do understand. It scares me.
Exactly.
And it really does. It does go beyond just even the lyrics. The lyrics get filtered through the intellect down to the heart and soul of an individual. But some of those beats and rhythms are actually, they bypass the intellect and they speak to the soul. And this stuff will manifest itself. I see it regularly. You know, when a kid has to come back to Shepherd's Hill Academy for a refresher course, the first thing I ask him is, what are you listening to? And their heads go down and they realize, because they learn this stuff while they're here. And it's always the first door back into falling away from what they know to be right. Talking about music, what do you make of former First Lady Michelle Obama saying that Beyonce is a role model for her daughters? I mean, how is that affecting, how our kids are looking at authority figures and then minimizing the effect that someone who's a self-proclaimed occultist and her husband invited to the White House, and that's a role model for our kids. I think we're so far off center in America that we don't even know where center is.
Yeah, and that's just it's like one example. It's such an easy one to point to, and you know the thing about someone like Beyonce that's so frustrating to me is I don't understand the feminist movement that claims her as a feminist, but also allows objectification to such a degree that women are, you know, literally become, you know, just the worst version of the sinful Jezebel. I mean, like, what? Where's the disconnect? There's no logic to
it. I think the same disconnect is like with the N word. If you're black, you can use the word. If you're female, you can basically prance around and sing about anything you want to. There is a disconnect there, though. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's so morally inconsistent for some parents, I think, who would never permit the N-word to be uttered in their home and yet find themselves, you know, have kids with iPods full of music that's got the word in it, and the kids don't seem to think it's an issue because they don't sing along with it or they don't use it in conversation or they would never call that anyone.
Yeah.
And so it is, but it's this inconsistency that we see across the culture, you know, that we want children to be innocent. And we that's a big thing. Parents would all say, oh, yeah, I want my kid to grow up innocent, to be a kid, to really, have a great childhood that's really full of good, wholesome things. Here's an iPhone. You're 10 years old.
An adult toy.
Go have fun.
And
you just kind of don't see the disconnect between the things you say you want for your child and then the actual experience of life that you're providing to her or to him. So, you know, I think that makes it's an important thing to kind of study in your own parenting.
Yeah. We're running out of time here, but I just had to ask you a quick question here. What specifically concerns you most about today's American public schools, and why the big push to make our kids think globally?
Yeah, there. I've written a whole chapter in that book about everything you ought to know, a couple chapters, frankly, about what you need to know about American public schools. One is, I think the most crucial thing to know is who's teaching the teachers. And, you know, when Bill Ayers is still considered, even in retirement, the dean of American education, you know that there are people with very specific agendas who are using and have been using since the 1930s, the public school system to advocate for a specific way of thinking. So it's no surprise, for example, that the government's quantified this in their studies of what children know at different ages and grades. That one third of America's high school seniors, back when I wrote the Kool-Aid book in 2011, one third of seniors could not tell you where the government gets its money. So, I mean, that tells you a lot about when you have, you know, Occupy Wall Street and all these movements of kids running, you know, the Bernie Sanders fans that should education should be free for everyone.
Yeah.
They don't even know where the government gets its money. So it's pretty much, you know, not surprising that they think they all ought to go to college for free and get a free car and a free house when they graduate. The culture has already succeeded, essentially, in creating the first generation of American socialists. And we saw that in this last election cycle with a number of young people who wanted Bernie Sanders. But really, if you in those same sorts of man on the street interviews, if you ask them what is socialism, they couldn't really tell you. But when you explain to them, you know, what if the government really were in charge of certain kinds of corporations and industries, they go, yeah, that's great. The government should do that. So they don't get it anyway, but it's, you know, we really have a lot to do as parents to say, here in my own home, I can take greater responsibility and have greater influence than the media, than the public school, than the pop culture. That's where we have to say, I'm still the parent, as you said, licensed to parent. I love the name of your show. And we have to exercise that license to parent and the responsibility to parent.
Amen.
And it really, in my view, starts with buying a couple books, you know, listening to your show regularly, finding a way to stay educated and stay informed.
Yeah.
And then my big thing is building those relationships with our children that allow for the free exchange and communication so that their hearts are open to what we want to instill
there.
Because that's the key. They can't hear us if they can't hear us.
That's exactly right.
So we have to be really work on those relationships.
Our guest on today's program has been columnist and speaker Mary Beth Hicks, author of the book that we've been talking about, Don't Let the Kids Drink the Kool-Aid. You'll find her and her books online at marybethhicks.com and also at amazon.com. Mary Beth, thank you for carving time out of your day today and allowing yourself to reach the presidential heights that we described in the early part of the program. We greatly appreciate you being on.
Absolutely. My pleasure, gentlemen. It's been great.
Thank you.
God bless you.
And remember that the work we do here on Licensed to Parent is merely an extension of the work that's done every day inside the gates of Shepherd's Hill Academy, a year-long Christ-centered residential program for teens in crisis. You can help that work continue by supporting the Shepherd's Hill Scholarship Fund. Your tax-deductible gift will go directly to helping families who can't afford residential care, well, get the help that they need for a teen who may be one step away from the grave or from jail. So please, won't you help today? You can give securely online when you visit licensedtoparent.org and click the donate button, licensedtoparent.org. Our program coordinator on Licensed to Parent is Daniel Fazina. Our technical producer is Carl Peets. And for Trace Embry, I'm Rich Rossel, inviting you to tell a fellow parent about us and then join us again next time to renew your License to Parent.
And remember, folks, if you don't train your children, somebody else will. God bless you. We'll see you next time.